All right, Stuart, ready to go.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. This is Resistance Radio with your host, Stuart Acuff, on www.enlightenradio.org. Welcome to this great day, the day of victory. Yesterday, Yertle the Turtle, McConnell the Turtle Man, the Senate leader, the majority leader in the Senate, announced that their last, for this year anyway, attempt to kill Obamacare is dead. The last stalking horse they had to kill Obamacare, the legislation called the Graham-Cassidy Bill, died yesterday and was mercifully collapsed yesterday and was mercifully put to death by its sponsors, Graham and Cassidy, and by McConnell, the Senate leader, the Republican leader in the Senate. Huge victory. McConnell now has admitted that they cannot destroy Obamacare this year, even though he did all he could to save any repeal effort. He did all he could to destroy Obamacare with bill after bill after bill. This was a third attempt, and this one fails again. Thank you, everybody, everybody, everybody who called the senator, who called Shelley Moore Capito, who called Joe Manchin, who called the senator in California, Kamala Harris or Feinstein, who called Jeff Merkley in Oregon, everybody who called the United States senator, thank you. Everybody who showed up at a sign waving and at a demonstration, at a rally at Shelley Moore Capito's office, outside her office here in Martinsburg, West Virginia. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We defeated the attempt, the last attempt for this year to kill Obamacare. Oh, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, ladies and gentlemen, this is a huge victory for the forces of good in America, for those who want to see justice in America and want to build on the progress we've made to make even more progress. What was so important, one of the things that was so important, there are many things so important about killing Graham Cassidy, but one of the things that was is so important that we talked about last week on this show is that the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, also called Obamacare, is probably the most important piece of social legislation passed in America since 1965. In 1965, the Democratic Congress and the LBJ, with the prodding of the Civil Rights Movement and Dr. King and everybody else in the Civil Rights Movement, passed Medicare, Medicaid, the Voting Rights Act, and started the war on poverty in 1965. And we haven't had as an important year as that in social legislation till the passage of Obamacare. So I wrote this yesterday afternoon after I heard that McConnell had killed it. Little poetic attempt by Stuart. Oh, let me stop before I read this poem. Let me thank John Case, the founder of www.enlightenradio.org, the chief executive, the chairman of the board, the president and CEO of www.enlightenradio.org. He's with us today, engineering the board and making sure that we're coming out to y'all. It's going to be a fun show today. We're going to have a little more music than usual, a little more poetry, maybe than usual. But there is so much great news, so much to feel good about today, so much inspiration to draw from the actions of our brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, and others around us. I want to start with this poem that I wrote yesterday. another attempt to kill Obamacare, dies in the death cult called the GOP. Trump tried with bribes and even a dare to those whose integrity he didn't fully see. GOP cannot govern nor even mar our memory of the effort made by one whose care made a way out of no way. Today, our dream of freedom and justice for all of us lives long as we willingly fight for democracy. And that's the struggle we're in, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, ladies and gentlemen. It's the struggle for democracy, the fight to save democracy in America. If we lose this fight, the world will lose its biggest and most powerful defender of democracy. If we lose this fight to defend democracy right now and beat back Donald Trump, we will be the first generation in the history of the United States to fail to defend, to fail in our effort to defend democracy. Because, see, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors, democracy has always been threatened in America. In fact, our original Constitution did not extend democracy to all our people. And while that Constitution was being written, people held slaves, chattel slaves. They refused to outlaw slavery in the Constitution when it was written. And those same men who wrote that Constitution were engaged in war against Native people in America. So it's always been a struggle to promote and defend democracy. You all remember the great struggle for abolition and great warriors like Frederick Douglass and Horace Greeley, who fought against slavery for year after year after year. William Lloyd Garrison, Frederick Douglass, year after year. The Quakers, year after year. The New England church people fought to end slavery, and the slave owners won until 1861, when a great war engulfed the entire continent, certainly the outlines of the United States, a great war for what freedom meant in America and what democracy meant in America. And that war only ended when the foes of freedom and the foes of democracy were defeated completely. You know, it took Sherman marching through Georgia to destroy that supply for the Confederate Army. It took Phil Sheridan, the cavalry general, to ride up and down with his cavalry troops the Shenandoah Pike, now called Route 11, that runs through many of the towns listening on this show, and destroyed the entire Shenandoah Valley for peace to come to the United States, for slavery to be defeated, for democracy to be won, at least in another step. And so that's what this fight is all about. There'll be many issues. It's huge that we stopped Graham Cassidy. It is huge. Let me just tell you, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, a lot of people in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia can claim victory on this today. A lot of people made phone calls. A lot of people marched and rallied in the last 2 weeks. Actually, the last week and a half, there's been 4 demonstrations against Graham Cassidy in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia. And the fight went over and over and over each time First, the House passed the American Health Care Act, I think it was called, the American Health Care Act, AHCA, and it went to the Senate, and we had to beat that. And then each time somebody else, another right-winger in the Senate, brought up another bill, had another idea, and they all would do the same thing. They'd take away the health care of 20 to 30 to 32 million Americans. They would destroy the Medicaid expansion in West Virginia. That's what they wanted to do. And take away the health care of 122,000 people in West Virginia, including seniors and children. They would take away some of the funding for the subsidies for private insurance. All of them would do those things and free up money to cut the taxes on the wealthy. Because this destroying Obamacare was about three things. Number one, it was about racism. Erasing the most important legacy of our first black president, our first African-American president. They will do all they can to erase those 8 years when we had a leader who felt for the people, who empathized with the people, and who was on our side. So the first reason to try to destroy Obamacare was racism. The second reason was to begin to roll back what the radical right wing, what the fascists and neo-Nazis call entitlements, which are simply programs that we have paid into or that serve to sustain us because our minimum wage is too low and wages in general are too low, and because wages have been stagnant for 40 years in America. So they wanted to begin to roll back. Now it's Medicaid in Graham Cassidy, in the Obamacare overturn legislation. Now it's Obamacare, now it's Medicaid. But they weren't going to stop with Medicaid. They were going to do all they could to destroy the foundation of Medicaid and then start on Medicare. Some scholars and pundits thought their real agenda with Medicare was to turn it into a voucher system, so care would no longer be guaranteed. See, they wanted to do to health care, Medicaid and Medicare, what they're trying to do in public schools, make you dependent on a voucher to get your health and your education. And then the third reason they wanted to destroy Obamacare was to free up money for the tax cut for the wealthy, to lower corporate tax rates from 25% to 15%. And of course, we all know that no corporation pays 25% taxes. Just doesn't happen. There's too many loopholes. There's too many deductions. There's too many ways to get out of it. But that's what was their agenda. That was in their agenda. That was part of their agenda when they set out to destroy Obamacare. And of course, we know by now that over 7 years, they promised again and again and again to destroy Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act. And because of us, they failed again and again and again. I don't want anybody within the sound of my voice to misunderstand. This legislation to destroy Obamacare was defeated not by the Democrats in the United States Senate, but by people, grassroots people, who believe in a just government. And in a free society, standing up and saying, not in my name, not in my state. Oh, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, our voices do matter, especially in the eastern panhandle of West Virginia, because we did more than our share here. We moved an entire empire because that's what Trump wants to create, a fascist authoritarian empire. And we moved the Trump attempted empire. People like Tracy Moore Reardon, Cheryl Kemp, Sherry Harris, Susan Pipes, who's been on this show. Cheryl Kemp's been on this show. Becky Phipps, Steve and Jill Shatkin. Steve's been on this show. Dr. Bob Miller and his wife, Fern Bernstein Miller. They've both been on EnlightenRadio.org. And more, Lynn Yellett, who marched and stood in the sun all summer long, waving signs on Foxcroft Avenue in Martinsburg, West Virginia, to try to get Shelley Moore Capito to do the right thing. We never got her to come out against Graham Cassidy. On the other hand, she never pledged to support it. And I would argue, and I will argue this until the last day my body is taking a breath, that it wasn't just the people in Maine who moved Susan Collins, and it wasn't just his conscience who moved John McCain, and it wasn't just his cynicism that moved Rand Paul. It was the way we moved the needle on public opinion. And that took everybody, everywhere, standing up. Now, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, ladies and gentlemen, here is the real message of today's program. We have got to keep Trump slowed down. We've got to keep his feet in mud. We got to resist and resist and resist everything that moves us in a wrong direction. Everything that moves us towards fascism, towards cutting wages, towards cutting benefits, towards cutting spending on people. Trump's ready to go to nuclear war, but he's not ready to save our own people. So it was the rallies, the sine waves in front of Capito's office, delivering letters to her in person, which made the great which drove the great resistance and made the victory possible. Oh, I'm so proud to be part of this resistance this morning. I'm so proud to be connected with these people we've been talking about. I'm so proud that this show is called Resistance Radio and that I'm able to talk about every week what's going on in the United States. It's good to be with y'all this morning. Let me read another poem. I wrote this one last week. When Graham Cassidy first came up and we were gearing up to try to defeat the bill, the legislation to destroy Obamacare and destroy the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. So this is the poem I wrote last week. Can a U.S. senator explain the pain of no health care to new parents whose child is ill? Have any of the wealthy senators watched one loved drain life away and waste slowly waiting for death, lacking care, perhaps just a pill? This is not dry paper policy. They would deign to just enrich the rich, stuff they love still. Destroying health care is destroying life with pain. Answer that, McConnell, Capito, and your crowd. Pro-life, protect the fetus until born. Your pro-life pledge signed with death's demons in hell. Thank you, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen. It's so good to be with y'all this morning. John, if you don't mind, give me a check on the time. Where are we at?
We're at 10:19.
Oh, 10:19. Good.
Okay.
John, why don't you play a little more Bob Dylan for us?
All right. These are excerpts from a session where he was producing the album Freewheeling in 1962.
That's all right now, Mama. Any way you do, yeah. Woo! Mixed up confusion, man, it's killing me. There's just too many people, and they're all too hard to please.
Bob's making these verses up as he goes along. Here, that was the end of that one.
I got a mixed
part of the writing process.
Yeah, that sounds like what he's doing. I mean, he got to the end of three verses and everything seemed to rhyme, but at the fourth one, he just gave up and just stopped, and then this started blowing on the harmonica.
Again, that's part of the writing process. I don't know. I read somewhere, of course, friends and neighbors, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, John Case and I, my leader and my friend, are both longtime fans of Bob Dylan. He knows a lot more about Bob than I do, in part because he's a musician and I'm not, and in part because he's a little bit older than me.
Right. The best wine.
Because he's read poetry longer than I have. You know, I read once that Bob would write a song sort of in one way, and that when they were in studio to record a song or record an album, he'd have his band, whoever his band was at the time, play it with him in two or three different ways, two or three different tempos, two or three different styles, and then select, after they'd recorded every different way they could play a song, select the way to what they wanted to put on the record. And of course, when he played live, he would go back to those other versions.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like Springsteen does. You know, he plays today. He plays Thunder Road and shoot four or five different versions. So, what were you going to say, John?
Oh no, I think you're right. I was observing on recently when Charlie Rose was trying to interview Neil Young. And he asked Neil, he says, you know, Neil, you know, some people say you're right up there with Bob Dylan, you know, and Neil says, well, yeah, you know, he says, do you understand? And he recently said that he never actually wrote the songs, that he couldn't possibly write those things now. And he has no idea who wrote them, but it wasn't him. You know, talking about some classic song, right? And Neil says, and Charlie's like desperate. He says, do you understand what he meant by that? Right, to Neil, he says, no. He says, I have no idea what he meant by that, but I understand how he feels.
I've heard Neil say in interviews before that the best thing he can do in writing a song is get out of the way and pin what comes to him. On the other hand, you know, the writing process is different for everybody. You know, Leonard Cohen spent 4 or 5 years writing Hallelujah, and he wrote 80 verses to Hallelujah. So he labored over every one of his words and every one of his songs. But I want to talk now, if I can, for a little bit about Black Lives Matter, because we have a struggle here in the Eastern Panhandle, and John, I'd ask you to join me in this discussion, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you know more about this than I do. We have a struggle here in the Eastern Panhandle about Black lives mattering to our people, our society, and to our government. I believe it was 4 or 5 years ago that a homeless African-American man on Queen Street in downtown Martinsburg jaywalked. Maybe he walked in the middle of the street. But before he got to wherever he was going, 5 City of Martinsburg police officers drew their service pistols and pumped 27 bullets, shells, into the body before it died and after he died of Wayne Jones, essentially for being black and homeless in Martinsburg, West Virginia. They said he had a knife, which nobody ever found, but how in the world does a man with a knife threaten 5 officers with 9mm pistols? And so every 13th day of every month, on the 13th day of every month, let me say it right, on the 13th day of every month here in Martinsburg at the corner of King Street and Queen Street, right in the center of town where the public library is and where the courthouse is, the county courthouse is, Berkeley County Courthouse is, we hold a vigil to remind this community and our government of Wayne Jones and what happened to him. And to say on the 13th of every month that Black Lives Matter in Martinsburg, and that we'll not forget the homeless African-American man who died for no good reason because he was homeless and Black. And so on the afternoon of the 13th of this month, September, we had a vigil for Wayne Jones, and then we had a demonstration to save food stamps at Capito's office, Shelley Moore Capito's office, and I wrote this poem. Today, being the 13th of the month, witnesses for justice gathered again in Martinsburg at the courthouse to remind those inside that from the grave, Wayne Jones calls for justice for his killing, unarmed by five police. Black Lives Matter in Martinsburg. So we gather again every month because Black Lives Matter in Martinsburg. Too many of our people are poor. Too many of us suffer the maladies of poverty, addiction, alcoholism, trauma, mental illness. But Black Lives Matter in Martinsburg. And so do the lives of folks broken by poverty, violence, and abuse. In this long day, we demand our representatives in D.C. not cut the food stamps that feed babies, kids, families. We have much to do in Martinsburg because Black Lives Matter in Martinsburg, as do the lives and bellies of hungry kids. John, are you there?
I am here. That was a beautiful poem.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate you saying that. Well, you're the one who turned me on to these vigils, and you're the one who helped our great friend, the president of Berkeley County NAACP, and Dr. Zaki McGill, get this vigil started off. And I am very proud that the leaders, almost all women, you know, so I'm not shy about saying the women leaders of the resistance in the Eastern Panhandle have taken up this cause of Black Lives Matter and have taken up the cause of the memory of Wayne Jones. And so I'm very happy to see, you know, 10, 15, 20 people from around the Eastern Panhandle who haven't been involved before, now involved, because the resistance brought us together. Part of what a social movement takes and part of what a social movement creates is the bringing together of allies. And, you know, today doesn't take much to be my ally. You got to love democracy. You got to love people. You got to love freedom. I'm willing to argue with you about most everything else. If you love freedom, you love democracy, and you love people. That's all that is called on for us to stop this dystopian nightmare that is Donald Trump. How's that, John? This dystopian nightmare that is Donald Trump. I might.
That sounds like the title of your next poem.
John, we've been friends too long. We think a lot alike. I think that might be the first line of my next poem.
Right, right. Then you have to. You're going to paint the some landscape you'd paint, like some desolated trail you have to go through somehow. To it's like Child Roland to the Dark Tower came.
There you go.
Yeah.
Child Roland, man, it's been a long time since I heard that.
That was
who wrote that?
Oh,
Beowulf.
No. 19th century poet Robert Browning, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, and that sounds right. Robert Browning.
Yeah. It was his effort at a I don't know. You know, back then, you weren't, if you were going to try to be major, somehow you felt like you had to write an epic of some sort, right? I mean, a longer poem that told right. some sort of tale, you know. And he wrote one. And, you know, it's a rough ride, I'm going to tell you, going through that valley. But anyway, there you go. So.
Well, that's thank you, John. Thanks for that. It is again a great day on enlightenedradio.org, www.enlightenedradio.org. We have so much to celebrate today. We're celebrating the defeat of Graham Cassidy, the defeat of the latest attempt by Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell to kill Obamacare. We defeated their attempt to defeat Obamacare. You know, this weekend was a lot of fun for an old rabble-rouser like me. Some of our listeners know that I was a union political and community organizer for 40 years all of my adult life, and which is a long time to rabble-rouse. So it was a great weekend for me. And one of the best things about the weekend was Donald Trump's fight with black athletes. And it wasn't just the NFL, right. It was also the NBA. Go ahead.
No, I was just kept being flabbergasted by the response of not just some managers, like the Warriors, right? They were the basketball team, right? Golden right, State Warriors. Exactly. And then and then there was owners were coming right. out. My God.
Yeah. You all may remember that it was last year that Colin Kaepernick, because of his Christian faith, so I looked into this a little bit, and Kaepernick has Bible verses tattooed on his arm. And he says it was because of his faith that led him to protest the official unchallenged shootings of African Americans by police forces across America, that he said, "I can no longer salute a flag that stands for a country that kills my brothers and sisters." So he began to sit during the Star Spangled Banner, during the national anthem. And one of his teammates, Eric Reed, wrote a column over the weekend where he describes how he and Kaepernick decided to move from sitting on the bench to kneeling. And they moved from sitting on the bench to kneeling to show respect for the flag and for the country, but to register a demonstration against officially sanctioned police violence against African Americans. And so it started with Colin Kaepernick. And then Donald Trump went to Alabama, I believe it was Huntsville, Alabama, at the end of last week to rev up his base. And he made a speech in Huntsville where he said, "Wouldn't you love it when one of these guys kneels down and shows disrespect to our flag and our country?" This is Trump speaking now. "That an owner would come out and say, 'Get that son of a bitch off the field, he's fired.'" Well, Trump didn't know what he was doing when he said that. And he went on to say, "Every one of them who kneels ought to be fired." Well, you know, Trump, that's the way you treat your children. And I'm sure that's the way you treated your employees. But you can't treat everybody that way. And people who don't depend on you for their paycheck and their family's health and security don't have to take that kind of crap. And so Stephon Curry of the San Francisco Warriors, who led them to the world championship last year, said he wasn't interested in going to the White House. And, of course, Trump famously, after Curry said that, Trump famously tweeted, The invitation is withdrawn. And LeBron James said it was an honor to go to the White House until Trump came along. And then the coach of the San Francisco Warriors, Steve Kerr, spoke out against Trump. And the coach of the San Antonio Spurs, Greg Popovich, who has been the best non-player in professional sports in America on the question of Black Lives Matter, spoke up. And he talked about what it means to be a free American. And by the dictates of the First Amendment, to register your opposition to wrong. And so two coaches, Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr, two of the best coaches in the history of the NBA, spoke up. And then the football players spoke up. And in game after game on Sunday, football teams together took a knee during the national anthem, or linked arms during the national anthem, or in some cases stayed in the locker room during the national anthem, all to show support for Colin Kaepernick and to push back against the authoritarian nature of Donald Trump. It was a great day to watch. I remember sitting here in my little apartment in Martinsburg, sort of watching the news on my phone on Sunday morning and seeing the news come across that the two teams who were playing in London, England, and because of the time difference, their game started at 10 in the morning, took a knee to start Sunday games off. And then they went to the pregame shows, and Terry Bradshaw, the former all-pro quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who took them to at least one, maybe two Super Bowls, spoke out. A white former player spoke out. And then the heavens came down. Everybody on the morning football shows, the afternoon football shows, spoke out about it. And I was moved to write this poem. I'm sorry for loading y'all down with poetry this morning, but we couldn't have a guest on, so I thought I'd read a little bit of poetry. These are short poems anyway. Glory, glory, black athletes lead simply by taking a knee. Now America has a great need for some of our fellows to lead. In this time, many of us have never seen Cap, King James, Curry. Please teach us again all that America has seen and all that America must be. It was a great day. This is a great time, brothers and sisters. It's a time that makes us crazy. It's a time that keeps us awake at night. But it is a time that we know what we do every day matters. The stands we take, our words, what we write, what we do, what we say to one another matters, because you don't defeat fascism standing on the sidelines and watching somebody else fight it. You don't defeat authoritarianism by hiding from it. It only encourages the authoritarians. You defeat it by engaging, by practicing democracy, by standing up, by singing out, by shouting out, by saying, this is the Rock of Appalachia here in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia. It's so good to have you with us this morning. It's so good to be celebrating everything that's going on. Now we're coming to a dark chapter in the show. This is a chapter of what's happening in Puerto Rico. American citizens living in a territory of the United States, Puerto Rico. Neither independent nor state, simply a territory of the United States. And the whole island was hit hard by Hurricane Maria. Initially, there was no power on the island. Now they're bringing back some power, mainly by generators. But there's still not enough. Two people died yesterday in a hospital because without electricity, the machinery keeping them alive failed. And Trump and his government, his administration, ignored the crisis in Puerto Rico for a solid week. People trapped by falling debris. People in hospitals left to die. People without water, without food. People in the countryside cut off from the cities. And we did nothing. Not a single Marine. Not a single National Guardsman. And finally, Trump sends a hospital ship. Finally, we're beginning to dispatch troops. But it's a shame and a disgrace on this government that while the response in Houston was immediate and the response in Florida was immediate, the response in Puerto Rico, because their skin is brown and their language is Spanish, were denied any help or support for a solid week. It's a black eye again on this administration. It's a black eye on the legacy of colonialism, and it's a black eye on our country. See, these questions of Black Lives Matter, this discussion about racism in America matters. It is a question of life and death to our people. And that's why we keep talking about it, and that's why it is all of us's responsibility to talk about it. That's not to say that the fight over economic justice is not important. It is critically important. After all workers have gone 40 years without a raise. But also, the struggle for racial justice is important. I read something this week that struck me as very sound. My friend John, and somebody wrote this week that social justice without economic justice is empty. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does.
I mean,
no justice, no peace. Wasn't there a slogan like that?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was. And Dr. King said, what value does it do a man to be able to sit at a lunch counter but not be able to afford the hamburger?
Right.
Yeah. So it's a great day, but there is so much work left for us to do. We're going to be back with you next Wednesday at 10 o'clock. John's going to take us out with some more of
Bob
Dylan's greatest work from this wonderful collection John has found. Why don't you introduce the collection and take us out with some music, John? Thank you very much, John Case. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors. See you next Wednesday.
All right. Thank you. All right, so the complete Freewheel and Bob Dylan sessions from 1962, now available, unearthed by somebody, nearly a three-hour collection of do's and redos and undos of you know, other stuff. So we're going to continue on with that for a few minutes here.
Of confusion, man, and it's a killing me. I'm but my footsteps never stop.